Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, the authentic source of Nigerian information, positive Nigerian energy all the way. I apologize for that break. Well, of course, we had to deal with some technical issues. Okay, so, well, before that break, we were talking to Miriam Tijani, which, of course, is still on the line. Hello.
Hi.
So, how are you doing? I was asking about how your day has been so far.
I'm doing all right. I had an early morning airport run. I had to drop a friend off. And then I've just been chilling and just kind of preparing myself for the interview or the discussion that we're about to have, actually.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, yeah. So my partner is here, Chris, who we want to say hi as well.
Hi, Miriam.
Hi, Chris. Nice to meet you.
I love the way you pronounce the name, Chris.
That's gonna cost you.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go right into the business of the day. So, who exactly is Miriam Tijani? Tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, your background, growing up, and you know, let's establish your Nigerianness big time.
Okay, obviously my name is Mariam Tijani. I'm from Abeokuta, Ogun State. I was born in Nigeria. My mom is a nurse. My dad is a furniture designer, set designer, who also happens to work in TV. My dad is also an ex military man, so army engineer. But his long-time career was in NTA, basically, from, like, set design to production and everything.
Oh, beautiful.
And then I was, thank you, and then I was raised by a nanny. So my siblings and I were raised by a nanny because, obviously, you know, growing up in Nigeria, you know, it's busy parents. You need somebody to be, you know, in-house to be able to kind of like help with the kids and stuff like that. But she was a fashion designer and also dad being a furniture and set designer as well. So I was either in either of their studios.
Okay.
And then my mom also, she had a supermarket, she had a pharmacy, and she had a clinic. So I was always around entrepreneurs, either in design or in retail. My grandparents are also entrepreneurs. So entrepreneurship was always around me, creativity, counting money. So as a child, my goal was to be an accountant because I used to be the person to count my mom's money at the end of the day because she was trying to train me and teach me about money because I've always said, I want to be an accountant when I grow up. So really, that's switching my background. And at 13, we moved to the UK. Obviously, mom being a nurse, they were looking for, you know, medical professionals. So my brother and... Yeah, so my brother and I moved with mom, my sister, and obviously dad, they stayed back. But I think the UK was really war kind of... I never knew I was black until I moved to the UK. I know it's really weird to say this.
The consciousness.
I've never... Like, obviously, growing up in Nigeria, like, the only thing I was conscious of was the whole tribe. You know, Yoruba, Igbo, Hausa, Delta, Bini. There was never a consciousness of, like, my blackness as a child until I moved to the UK as a 13-year-old. And I remember... The first encounter was, you have a Nigerian accent. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what that is. I'm speaking English.
Yes.
Like, you understand me. I understand
and
you.
That is
you
what's know, important. Kids will be,
exactly, right? And kids will be kids. And obviously, going to a school whereby in the whole of the school, from like year 7 all the way to like year 13, that is like GS1 to like foundation year in uni, there was like 5 black people in my whole school. So we were like the minority. Huh. Like, I'm talking about, like, and the three of the black people are me, my brother, a family friend, and two other guys from Zimbabwe. So we stood out like a sore thumb, right? Like, we are migrant kids in a predominantly white environment. So that was where my awareness started being raised. You know, when you're doing sport, like, you know, they assume, there was just so much assumptions growing up in the UK. You know, I started recognizing my skin color. Even with older people, I went to Germany, I think at 14, and again, being the only black child on a school trip, I recognized racism as a 14-year-old on a school trip in Germany. So for me, I needed to kind of educate people about Africanness, that we don't all live on huts, we don't all live in trees. So I felt like I was like African spokesperson, like I felt responsible to educate the ignorance of like thinking that Africa is a continent, is a country rather than a continent. You know, so those kind of awareness that come into play. So when my friends that were non-black came to visit me, I'll make sure that they eat our, not just jollof rice, but I will teach them about eating pounded jam. I will show them how to make the food. My Oyinbo friends, I used to plait their hair, I used to like just educate them. Whenever like anyone is coming from Nigeria, I'll make sure they get us like the latest CDs and stuff like that, so that we can play the music over there. You know, this was before YouTube days and stuff like that. So that was just my experience of like, I'm going to tell the other side of Africa's story that nobody ever talks about, and these Oyinbo people think that everyone who's from Africa is, you know, he's reading with hate, he's poor, we look like apes, and just all the negative connotations about the continent. I felt uncomfortable with, because that was not my Nigerian experience. I'm a middle-class Nigerian. Mm-hmm. So I needed to show them that middle-classness of my Nigerianness, you know. And it used to be funny, because I used to be the smartest in class as well. Mm-hmm. So that, like, you're talking about my Nigerian accent, but I'm beating you, and I just came from Nigeria. So it's like, I didn't understand that. Should you not actually get close to me to say, give me some of your Nigerian sense. Teach me some math.
Wow.
do you understand? So yeah. I was raised by very smart, smart parents, and stuff like that. So for me, it was kind of like, the ignorance is literally something that was created by the media. It's not something that these kids created themselves. Mm. And it's also created in the home as well, because of, again, they're not well-traveled. Like, a lot of white people don't travel, by the way. They're not well-traveled. There's a lot of ignorance, you know. So if somebody who doesn't even go to, like, the next town, or they've never been to London, and they, like, do you understand? It's like, there's only so much you can do.
Wow.
So that's kind of my background, basically, in a large sense. Yeah.
I find it very interesting. Now, talking about all this experience and what you went through, and the relocation initially. Now, would you say that all these things was actually what made the Maryam Tijani, I mean, the whole experience in the diaspora, I mean, when you newly just moved in?
Yeah, it really was. I definitely, and I think also seeing my parents' work ethic, not just, I think from Nigeria, I think also in the UK, whereby you are around people whereby they are, for me, it's weird when Africans go to the diaspora, and we own things, right? You have two lives. You have your African life, and you have your diaspora life, right? And within a year of my mom being there, she already bought property. Do you understand? So for me, like, the work ethic to be like, okay, this is not our land, but we are going to make an impact known on this land, I think was very inspiring to me. So I grew up with, like, really hardworking parents. So for me, it was about thriving to be the best version of myself, and also beyond that, also making other people's lives better. So I think it's a accumulation of both. Really having a cushioned life, but not being raised as a cushioned child. Does that make sense?
It does. Great sense.
I remember, like, the first week we got to the UK, my mom was like, okay, Ijan, your brother now, you guys are teenagers. One person is going to be in charge of cooking for the week. The other person is going to be in charge of cleaning the house. So she's
which
not
was
like no, both. So we used to swap. So okay. The week that okay. I'm cleaning, my brother's cooking. The week okay. that I'm cooking, my brother's cleaning.
Beautiful.
Right? Mm. So it's like, no, you're not going to be spoiled in this environment. Well, she's still smart to us. She will give you the phone. She'll be like, call the police. She'll be like, call the police. You'll be on the next available flight to Nigeria. You know? So those kind of values for me was like really important in growing up in that environment to say, yeah, you're not going to be spoiled that like this or in both kids that could tell their parents, shut the hell up. No, you're not. You will get a slap. You know, and stuff like that. So growing up, I think my mom was literally like, you know, dad was not just not there at the time. So she did what she had to do to make sure that she doesn't have any regret for bringing us over there.
Well,
okay, well, now, actually, we are... I feel like I don't want us to divert, because I could go on and on hearing your story, but at the same time, I don't want us to divert from the exact theme, which is back to Nigeria. And that is what is of major interest to us today, your back to Nigeria story. Now, okay, let me just ask, how many years did you end up spending in the UK?
You know what? Okay, I'll tell you what happened. We moved in 2002.
Okay.
I came back to Nigeria in 2007. It was my Nigerian trip in 2007 that kind of was like, I want to export African fashion. I want to export African music to the world. And then I obviously went back in that 2007. You know, you come and you do your 2 weeks holiday and blah, blah, blah. And then in 2013, I came back for my master. For it was during my undergrad. I came for like my research for my dissertation.
Okay.
And at the time, I came back with the intention of launching a crowdfunding platform. Okay. So I came to research basically. Mm-hmm. And then in 2013, I was there for 2 weeks again. I went back, finished my undergrad, and then I was like, you know what? Let me see what I can do. I launched it in the UK. I was like, I want to create a platform. So it was called Pitch It Africa. So it was meant to be a platform where people can pitch their ideas and then we can help them raise money to fund those ideas. So, but then I realized that it was important for me to bridge the gap between Africans in the diaspora who have the resources, who have the capital, and then young Africans here who actually know problems to solve. Because another thing I realized that growing up over there, we always think we know Africans' problem and we always think we know what we need to be solving, right? So I realized that that was like the biggest mistake that we can make. We needed to collaborate rather than work in isolation, right? So that was my kind of like biggest motivation for moving back. So I then moved back in 2015. My sister was moving back to Nigeria then.
Oh, your sister also moved?
Yeah, she eventually moved. She came down for her master's and she was there for a few years and stuff like that. So she was coming back to Nigeria with my niece. I was like, you know what? This is my opportunity. I wouldn't feel like I'm in Nigeria by myself.
Okay.
So I moved back with that. Yes. So between 2015 and 2017, I was here. So came down to launch Pitch It Africa. It was meant to be in partnership with another platform in Nigeria, but it didn't really work out. But my dad was like, you're already in Nigeria. You might as well do your NYSC. You say you want to understand Nigeria. You want to, you know, you might want to be in a position of like, you know, politics and policy change and educational reform and stuff like that. My dad was like, the best thing to do is do your NYSC and make sure you secure yourself for those positions when those time come.
Okay.
And for me, that was like the best decision I made. So I was meant to be here for a year. I ended up staying here for almost 2 years. I really didn't want to go back, but I also promised my parents that before I turned 30, I was going to come back to the UK to do my master's.
Okay.
So that was the reason why I then moved back to the UK in 2017. So I did my master's in fashion, entrepreneurship, and innovation. So my goal really was to build a... Because I realized that the creative industry here was a massive thing.
Okay.
But we were undervaluing our cultural IP. You know, from fashion to music to food. Like, if you think about France, right, Italy, like, these are what these countries sell. They sell culture. They don't have any mineral resources. They don't rely on crude oil. You know, they don't rely on, like, all these things that are driven by market and commodities. They sell culture. Culture is abundant, right? And African culture is massively undervalued. You know, and if you retake me, because Oyinbo people used to call our style exotic. you know, safari
indeed
fashion.
You know, exotic.
Do you understand? Their opinion of what African fashion, African style is, was very primitive. And I wanted to be part of the people that are innovating within that space and actually taking Africa to the world. Right?
Yeah.
So after my master's, that was kind of what led me to officially then, you know, opening Bida, which is a store, which is a showroom and an agency. And we call it the African Brand Incubator.
Okay.
So those were, that was my journey. And then moving back now was actually driven by HemSARS. HemSARS is my biggest motivator to move back to Nigeria.
Wow.
It was weird, right?
No,
everybody wants to get out of Nigeria.
Because Chris was saying that before we started this interview, and I was arguing with him that no, that you've been around even before the HemSARS, and he's saying that he was saying it jokingly though that why would anyone want to come back after the HemSARS? I mean, but you say now that was your biggest motivation. I find that
was my biggest motivation. That was my biggest motivation because it was really bizarre because my friends in Nigeria that knew me kept saying, Mariam, you're a strategic thinker, you're a doer, we need people like you in Nigeria. We are tired, we are fed up, like, you're doing things for the African space anyway, so you're not one of those, you know, passive activists that will be posting, you know, HemSARS banner on socials and stuff like that. I'm actually doing things for Africa already. I've always been passionate about Africa, you know. So, and I was just frustrated because I felt like I couldn't. For me, the UK is nice. Yeah, it's, again, cushioned life. Do you understand? I could stay there, be earning my pounds, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not solving problems. If I'm close to the problem, I cannot have to be part of the solution.
Of course. Of course.
You know, so sitting on the sidelines for me was not something that I cared for. The funny thing was, I was going to book my ticket before the Lekki massacre happened.
Okay.
And after it happened, my parents were like, you're not going anywhere.
Of course.
I'm just like, watch me. As soon as the second lockdown in the UK was announced, I was just like, hell no, I need to get off here. And I just literally booked my ticket as soon as I found out that I can travel. And I'm here.
Okay, so before we begin to talk about your intentions, now that you've arrived and all of that, but I want us to take a very short break. Why? Because I want to play a soundbite. Now, we once had an interview with a returnee. She used to also live in the diaspora. She's a Nigerian, but she's back to Nigeria. And she has some things to say about returning to Nigeria as a Nigerian in the diaspora. Her name is Simisola Dabiri. We're going to take that very short break. I just want you to listen to what she has to say and, of course, hear your contribution. How about that?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
I think the first thing you need to understand is that most Nigerians in diaspora want to come home. Whether they put an effort into coming home, it's a different thing entirely. A lot of things that stop Nigerians from coming home is about the fear. The fear of being duped, the fear of no water, no electricity, etc., etc. But for me, what I say to a lot of my friends is that you can work around those things. You can put things in place, you can work around them. Yeah, you will go with the flow of it and stuff like that. But if you want to come home, start looking at coming home. Don't leave it, because the longer you leave it, the harder it becomes. The older you are, the harder it becomes as well. Do you know what I'm saying? So if you want to come home and you want to add to the quality of life of Nigeria, even if it's like you set up your own little business and you are actually paying people, you know, you're paying people a wage, you're actually contributing towards the economy. You're actually helping to grow Nigeria.
Spirit of Nigeria. Of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. All right, Mariam, did you hear that? Hello? Hello? Okay, hello? It looks like we lost Mariam there. Okay, well, definitely that was the voice of Simisola Dabiri talking about Nigerians in the diaspora returning to Nigeria. talking about. Just come home. Come and start something. Just do something. Just come home. Make the first, take the first step, you know. Well, what do you think about that, Chris?
Yeah, that's true. That's, you're contributing to the GDP, by the way, doing that. And I find Miriam's story particularly inspiring, okay? Her story is the story of, it's an ongoing story of true Nigerians, real Nigerian parents, and children who are well brought up by those parents, right? And, you know, in a world where values are fast, are slipping, like, you know, by the day, by the minute, mainly, you know, and her story.
Okay, all right, seems like we have Miriam back with us. Hello? Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, all right. So we lost you there for a little bit. All right, so I was asking that, did you hear what Simisola said about returning home?
I had the beginning part which said the truth is not the truth, and that's why I will come back home.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the that I had before the line went off. Yeah.
Oh, unfortunately. Okay, but maybe we can get to replay that in the course of the interview. But Chris has some things to share, or some things some questions to ask you.
Yeah, Miriam. Hello, are you there?
I can hear you.
Please call my name again so that I can inspire me. You know, because, you know, just like you said, your ambition is to inspire millennials around the world, black millennials around the world, correct? Your mission is to inspire black millennials around the world. All right, you can hear me well. You know, but for me,
okay. Oh well. Unfortunately, it looks like the network is trying to mess with this this beautiful moment. But we hope that we can get to, you know, have the network cooperate with us. Anyway, we're still talking to Miriam Tijani. She's the founder of Bida. She's a serial social entrepreneur, and we are talking about back to Nigeria from a Nigerian British experience. Hello, Miriam.
Hello, I'm here.
All right, so we're trying to have the we're trying to get the network to cooperate with us.
Maybe I won't ask you to call my name again. But you can do it.
Yeah, so the last thing I heard you said was that my mission is to inspire black millennials around the world.
Correct.
And I responded with a yes.
Oh, beautiful. So join me into that, those black millennials. It would,
no, you're not. Don't come here.
Okay. Anyway, the truth of the matter is that I was just telling Leah that your story is truly inspiring, okay, and it's an ongoing story.
Thank you.
Of true Nigerian parents, and it's also ongoing story of those children well brought up by those parents amid the in a world where values are slipping by the minutes, you know, under the guise of technology and what have you, which I find, you know, inexcusable. And you have, from what, just listening to you, my head was spinning. Could this be true, you know? Because most, what we hear of Nigerians there, that, like they are spoiled, and they take a leverage on the law there to bully their parents, or, you know, and all of that. But you have just told us now that you stood differently, you know, and you stood true to the values that your parents used to bring you up, and that also worked for you in a white dominated society, and also made you excel. For me, in fact, I think you should take this like an evangelism, and actually begin to, you know, this alone would be like a healing thing, a therapy for Nigerians, even outside, anywhere around the world, even at home. So they will know that, you know, there are Nigerian children who fantasize about, oh, I want to go to London, I want to go to America, so that they can start some very crazy life there. But you are telling us that you don't have to be crazy to be in US. You don't have to be crazy to be in London. You can still be in Nigeria. In fact, your Nigerianness is your strength. Your Nigerianness is your value. Your Nigerianness 100%. Is the only thing you have to sell out there. And you did, and you have made us proud. In fact, perhaps they should take you to, you should join Abike Dabiri, actually, you know, the Diaspora Commission. You'll be a great value for her. But then, the question I have is this. You said NSAS was your motivation to be here. But by the way, the Lekki massacre issue is still an ongoing debate. As you know, Nigerian government wants to go and sue CNN. That is not a massacre and all of that. But then for those who know and those who saw, they might believe differently. You know, but the truth of the matter is that the fact that you use that as a trigger for you to remain in Nigeria or to come back to Nigeria still baffles me. For me, though it baffles me, but it's ennobling for me. It's cool. I love it because I am about patriotism, intense patriotism and all of that. And you have you have even inspired me more, even though I'm older than you and all of that. So I'm now your fan. Take me as your number one fan right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know. So what I'm looking at is, from that whole scenario, and you're wanting to return even amid that storm, what do you think actually is possible to do in this time that actually propelled you to come back? What do you think is possible? Because most Nigerians right now are giving up. A lot of people are running.
You know what's so interesting? My friend in Nigeria was telling me that Maya want to get out. I was like, so what's going to happen? 200 million Nigerians are going to leave Nigeria. So what are we coming back to if everybody leaves? Because the reality is the diaspora never feels like home. We are always made to feel like a second-class citizen, wherever we are. We might be the best in an industry, we might be the best in class, but you wouldn't, like, the color of your skin always serves as an hindrance in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. For me, as a black female entrepreneur in a predominantly white environment, I know the hassles I go through. You know, the misogyny I go through, the racism I go through, people always have this assumption about your capabilities and everything, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, those lands are already, they are fine, right? Like, there's not much, I can't really make as much impact in the UK as I can in, even if I just pick my small town in Abeokuta. Yes. And I say, I just want to pick Abeokuta and I want to start problem solving there. Mm. And I think that's the attitude, in, you know, Nigerians need to take. Young, old, you know, it's so funny. My boyfriend and I were driving through, I think, Maryland. And I saw a guy who was on something that looks like a skateboard. Okay. He had no legs. And I was saying to my boyfriend that if this was the UK, this guy would be representing Paralympic. Hmm. That's just one avenue, you know. And then my boyfriend was like, for him to even get there, he has to lobby. And I'm like, what does he need to lobby? I didn't even really understand that. I was like, why does he need to lobby to represent Nigerian? To basically say, I'm a disabled Nigerian, but I'm still useful to my community. And I want to inspire other disabled people that they can do more with their life. So for me, just seeing something as minute as that inspired me to say, if I actually want to put Paralympic team together, someone like that man would be one of the people I want to put in that Paralympic team, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for me, I didn't feel comfortable sitting in the UK and seeing that there are problems I should be actively solving with my other strategic and intelligent friends that are down here.
Okay.
They are exhausted. So it was for me to come in here and inspire them. You know, because I inspire my friends, like, I motivate them. I always kind of give them the whole, like, you know, we can do more. Like, we just need to believe that Nigeria will be great because my kids have to grow up in Nigeria. I don't want to have to send them to schools outside of the country. Like, so for me, Nigeria has to be great.
Of course.
It's not even an option. Mm-hmm. It's like, it has to be great. I don't know how else to say this. Like,
but I understand where you're coming from. I understand where you're coming from. And looking at everything, you know, you coming back home because of the NSAS. Now, so many Nigerians, well, a couple of Nigerians have decided to leave Nigeria because of the NSAS. And so many Nigerians in the diaspora do not want to come home because of the NSAS. Now, looking at all this in general, what would you say, you know, what would you say to any Nigerian in the diaspora at this moment? Because so many people don't even before the NSAS, so many people want to come home, but don't even know where to begin, don't know how to come home. And that was one of the things that Simi Sola Dabiri from the soundbite I played, that was one of the things she was also talking about. But now, looking at everything in general, especially taking advantage of the NSAS, what would you say should be the first step, I mean, the reason, and you know, what every Nigerian in the diaspora should do at this moment coming home to Nigeria?
You know what? The coming home thing to me, I think it needs to come from like individuals, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people have a delusional idea about coming back to Nigeria, right? Okay. And for me, you need to come in and actually don't come in for 2 weeks and you think that you know Nigeria. I mean, come in and stay for 3 months straight and live in the Nigeria of, like, no electricity, like, no clean water. Like, live in Nigeria where you're actually facing the realities of Nigeria. And that's how you can actually solve a problem. Because when people come for 2 weeks, it either gives them the wrong opinion of Nigeria to say, oh, Nigeria's amazing. It's easy to live in Nigeria. Nigeria's expensive. That's the reality. There's inflation and everything right now.
At the moment,
and the other alternative is that some people live in Nigeria for 2 weeks and they're like, oh, I can't take it. Mm-hmm. So again, 2 weeks is not enough for you to get your ideal Nigerian experience.
Okay.
You know, so for me, we need to do something, because it's like you can't be saying you're a Nigerian all over the world and you're not part of the people solving the problem.
Wow.
I'm tired of people in the diaspora. Like, you know, when they engage me, I literally get pissed off with them because they are passive activists. They want to come on Twitter and start shouting about things they don't know about. You're not living these experiences. How can you be on the sideline and you're talking about from listening to CNN or listening to the media or listening to what your uncle who has no plans for Nigeria than to complain?
Mm.
Like, if you're not actively solving problems in Nigeria, I don't want to talk to you. I don't need your negative energy. I want to be around people that are actively solving a problem. And that is the problem. Like, a lot of people want to be in the Nigeria of like, oh, you know, when you come to Nigeria for Christmas, dirty December. That's what they want. That's what they want to do. That's the Nigeria that they care about. They care about the party life.
Mm.
Yeah. That's what they care about. They don't care about getting their hands dirty. And you have to.
Mm.
What's your plan? Do you want to create jobs? What were you doing in the diaspora? Bring those knowledge back here. Were you a cleaner? Do you want to come here and set up a cleaning business? Were you working for the train system? Do you want to come and, you know, implement those kind of, you know, ideas here? You know, you have to pick a problem and solve. We can't all complain that Nigeria's not good. Somebody has to be solving this problem. Because even in diaspora, it's not the government that solves all the problem. It's the people that are thinking.
But looking at everything, it's easier said than done. These things
are
very easy to say. But for any Nigerian that wants to come home, take for example you. What was the first thing? What has been so far, what have you done? What is the first thing to do? To even say, okay, I want to do something, I want to start something. What's the first thing? Because it is a very big step. It's a major step, and it's scary
it's a major
and confusing.
Step, yes.
So, what should be the first thing that any Nigerian should even begin with? Coming
okay,
home,
I would say that we live in a globalized economy right now. Like, we are all on socials, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, half of my team is in Nigeria. You know. Half of the team are in the UK, right?
Yes.
So I already had the bridge to get into Nigeria because I already have a base here, right?
Mm.
So for me, if you don't have any access to anything, start building those relationships actually.
Okay.
Start connecting with people that you might need when you're out here or when you want to collaborate with, right?
Mm.
Accommodation is also a big thing. Trying to get property in Nigeria is not the easiest thing. There's too much bureaucracy around getting properties in Nigeria. right? But there are, you know, platforms that you can go and they kind of, you know, help you to kind of relocate to Nigeria.
As a matter of fact, I'm so sorry to cut you. As a matter of fact, we have one like that on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, Real Estate Nigeria. We have a real estate expert who enlightens people in the diaspora, especially about coming home and getting properties in Nigeria. So, yes, that's a major guide as well.
Exactly. So platforms like you just mentioned, or, you know, platforms like Move Back to Nigeria, like, you know, you need to just make sure that you build those networks before you get here, because Nigeria could be very intimidating. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, now I'm speaking like a devil's advocate. I'm already talking about all the good sides and blah, blah, blah. Like, I've been trying to secure property since I've been around for like 3 weeks now, and it's just been a mission and a half just to even secure that property and pay and move in. Like, it's just so much bureaucracy to get this property. And you also can't blame the landlords. You know, you have things like, you know, they say, like, you know, fraudsters are taking their properties and they've trashed them, you know, certain type of people. So there's a lot of, you know, it's just protection, right? They don't want people to trash their property and or people that can't afford to maintain the rent and stuff like that. So I understand that. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, those are the things you need to look out for. And then what's your plan? You know, a lot of people want to move to diaspora, but they don't have any plan. They just want to escape Nigeria. It's the same with people that are coming from the diaspora. Like, don't just want to escape the diaspora. What's your plan in Nigeria? And Nigeria is also a firefighter environment, right? You're going to keep firefighting. You know, like, you're going to keep firefighting, and you have to understand how to pivot into something else if what you came in for does not work. But I would definitely say networking is your biggest asset in Nigeria. And network does not have to be physical. It could be virtual. You know, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Like, slide into people's DMs. Track conversation with them. Send that email. You know, start building those relationships before you even get out here. You know, I recruit my entire Nigerian team online. Wow. My business partner, I never met her.
Wow.
We met through consultancy. I was actually meant to consult for her, and then she ended up becoming my business partner. Everybody in my team that I've been working for the last 2 years, I never met them. I recruited everybody virtually. We've been remote working for the last 2 years, and I only met them last weekend.
Wow. Okay, great. Okay.
So in terms of, like, you can't trust Nigerians and stuff like that, I don't know where all these things are coming from. I think, you know, we just need to be, I don't know, self-aware and just trust your instincts. Not everybody's good and everybody's bad.
Absolutely.
That's how I kind of live my life.
All right, before we go further, for our listeners, we're still talking to Miriam Tijani. She's the founder of Bida, a serial social entrepreneur. And, of course, she's a Nigerian-British who is back to Nigeria because of the NSAS protest. I think it's safe to say that now. Anyway, let's take a very short break. We've been going on and on. And, I got carried away. This conversation is beautiful. I've got carried away. Let's take a very short break. You mentioned that you love artists like Adekunle Gold, Tiwa Savage, and one more person. I'm not sure I can remember right
Burna
now.
Burna Boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which one should I play you? One from Burna or Adekunle or Tiwa Savage? Or pick two. Let's take two songs.
I'll say Tiwa and Adekunle Go.
Tiwa
I'm biased because she's a female.
Okay.
And we have to support.
Okay.
And Adekunle Go because I just love the way that he's evolved
and
as an artist.
I noticed that your style, from your style and Adekunle's style, you know, it goes traditional, and you know, you have this Afro vibe.
Yeah,
and okay.
Yeah.
So you share that in common. All right, let's take that break. I'll be leaving you with something from Tiwa Savage, and then we can take something from Adekunle Gold. Please just stay on the line. All right.
I know come this life to suffer. If I follow politician, you go hear him for paper. They go call him prostitution. Who no like enjoyment? If money day for pocketing. Shebi na national budget, you. We go blow my trumpet. Koroba, 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 oya gariya. Koroba, koroba, koro, koroba, koroba, koro, oya gariya. Koroba, 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 koro, oya gariya. Koro, koro, koroba, 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 oya everybody gariya something. He say, darling, I'm watching you, smarting you don't move. You come, they shout to me, the money you know what for. Commando, you carry overload. Yawade, Koro, show one leg, go one leg. Koro back, Koro back, Koro back, Koro back, Koro. Oya gariya. Koro back, Koro, Koro, Koro back, Koro back, Koro. Oya gariya. Koro back, Koro back, Koro back, Koro back, Koro. Oya gariya. Koro, Koro, Koro back, Koro back, Koro back. Oya everybody gariya something. I don't need to bother you at all. Monkey they walk in bamboo, they chill. Let me tell you, say you be talk and do, oh girl. Tell me what you feel do. I don't mean to bother you at all. Monkey they walk in bamboo, they chill. Let me tell you, say you be talk and do, oh girl. Tell me what you feel do. Koro back, koro back, koro back, koro back, koro. Oya gariya. Koro back, koro koro, koro back, koro back, koro. Oya gariya. Koro back, koro back, koro back, koro back, koro. Oya gariya. Koro, 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 ba, koro, ba, koro, ba. Oh yeah, everybody carry us up.
Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
I dey high in the sky, now you dey make me fly. I dey soar dey go, now you give me wings, you. This is fun, so much fun, I'ma make it no stop. I'm so happy, baby. Now you dey give me joy. Anytime you say you love me, you dey make me lose control. Ara mi wa lona, baby. Moti high, I no won't come down. I am lost in paradise. I beg you, no find me.
I beg you, no find me.
Moti sanu sinu ayo. I beg you, no find me. Ibini makuzi,
ibini makuzi yo, ibini makuzi yo.
Amo ni olale mo,
biyo ni olale mo, biyo ni olale mo.
Ore ni move magwe,
ibini makuzi yo, ibini makuzi yo.
Ni olale mo,
biyo ni olale mo, biyo ni olale mo.
Amo ni me mi ai. No worry about me, I'm in good hands. I'm in love, so in love, I'ma make it no stop. I dey here with you, babe, today and forever. Every time you say you love me, you dey make me lose control. Ara mi wa lona, baby. Moti I no one come down. I am lost in paradise. I beg you no find me.
I beg you no find me.
Moti sanu sinu ayo. I beg you no find me. And ibini makuzi yo.
Ibini makuzi yo. Ibini makuzi yo.
Amo mi olalema.
Mi o ni olalema o.
Already move my
way.
I'm
nobody's going to give you another country. You're never, ever, ever going to come from America, Japan, whatever, whatever, no matter what passport you carry. You're black. You've got Nigerian blood flowing in your veins. So there is no other way apart from making the best use of what we have. We have sun. We have people. We have land. We have farming. You know, I remember when I used to learn cash crops in Nigeria. Now, hardly anybody learns about cash crops now. Do you understand? And I used to be so proud. Oh, Nigeria, it does rubber, it does this, it does that. Do you know what I mean? I remember as a child in secondary school feeling that way. And I still hold on to that. And I believe that sooner or later, we will turn ourselves around again.
The spirit of Nigeria. Of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. All right, we still have Miriam Tijani, and of course, we're still having this beautiful conversation, talking about a Back to Nigeria experience, and it's been quite beautiful. She's shared quite a couple of incredible stories with us. All right, Miriam, are you still with us?
I am. I'm here.
Okay.
In fact, it seems to me like I'm in a class of a sort. You know, we do lectures about patriotism and
did you get your pen and paper ready?
Oh, in fact, my brain is already recording everything. Anyway, you know, taking it from where your internet left off. Yes, you're in Nigeria, and thank God you said Nigeria is a work not just in progress. A zigzag, entity of a sort. You know, Nigeria is very, I mean, thank God you understand and you felt it yourself. Nigeria is a difficult place to live in. I mean, there is no gainsaying that fact. And I wanted to ask, this in the time that you started this, what I call visionary movement, you must have encountered lots of challenges. You know, and for you to say we're firefighting people, I agree with you to the last, every word of that. Now, what challenges have you encountered, and which of these challenges actually shook you and almost snapped you out of this? You know, what a lot of your friends and colleagues in the diaspora would say reverie, because like you're in a dreamland in Nigeria, thinking that you're going to change Nigeria. That's what I'm sure they are thinking. But I know that you are here to make it work, and you will succeed. But in all those challenges, which of them almost shook you out of this? You know, that almost made you want to
change your mind.
You know, that virtually frustrated you.
So I will start from 2015. So 2015, I told you that I moved to Nigeria, and I came to launch a crowdfunding platform. So when I got my offer letter, I saw, I think, 325K, and I thought that that was a monthly salary, not realizing that that was my yearly salary. So technically, I was earning 25,000 naira per month as a first-class business management graduate from the UK. With, at the time, over 10 years experience, because I've been working from when I was 16, right, over 10 years experience, right, and I was surviving on 25K. The only saving grace was my job came with an apartment, and then the company gave me breakfast and lunch. And I couldn't tell my parents. I literally got to Nigeria, and I found out on my first day that my salary was going to be 25K, because they were very smart and strategic to say, oh, because I'm coming as a strategic partner, so really, because I'm going to be my NYSC with them, so I'm more of like an intern. I'm a graduate intern, right? And I mean, like in Yoruba, they would say, "Iwaju oselo, eyin ose pada si." It's like, I can't go forward, I can't come back, right? I'm already here, right? And this is the first thing I'm encountering on my journey here. And my parents were already like, "I don't understand why you're going back to Nigeria, like why you're going to Nigeria, like, you know, you're a first class graduate, you can get a job, like, you know, people are demanding you, you're a consultant, like you've done so much by it." But for me, it was not about the money. I'm an impact-driven person. I came here to solve a problem. And I was not going to be a coward and go back to the UK when I have not completed my mission in Nigeria, is to serve Nigeria for 1 year, understand the problem and see how I can galvanize people to come and support me to solve bigger problems, right? So I can't talk about solving problems when I have not even experienced the problem I needed to solve, right? So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to die. 25,000 per month, that could barely, like, one trip to the mainland from the island, I'm back with 10,000 naira in Uber. Literally. If I literally go to visit my sister on the mainland and my niece, I'm back. That's 10,000 naira gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, okay, I don't have the luxury to be doing that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to learn how to budget effectively according to my new Nigerian standards, right?
Mm.
So I have to feed for dinners and I have to feed for weekends, right? I can't drink pure water because I will fall sick. So obviously, I still have to drink my bottled water. I still have to drink my Oyinbo cereals. I still have to use my... like, because there's just certain things that I grew up on, like I'm accustomed to.
Yeah.
And I have to be like, you know what, when do I have to go to the market and say, what can I cook in the market for 5K? And, you know, like I have to just think like an average Nigerian and say, people have to survive like this. And I'm still privileged because my job came with an apartment, right? They topped up my phone on a weekly basis.
Okay.
I got breakfast and lunch. So really and truly, I need to just manage on 25K, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell my parents, but my sister knew. So my parents used to ask for my bank account, and I never gave it to them. You know, even though they're like, oh, this girl's getting crazy. I'm like, she's getting enough money for us to survive on. But they never knew that was my yearly salary. I couldn't tell them. Because they'd be like, why are you doing Nigeria? We don't actually understand, like, you know?
Nobody would. So, I wouldn't.
Nobody would, right? So they, you know, whenever they send me money, they'll send it to my sister. So my sister will send it to me. And I will literally just include that money in my salary to use to sustain myself for the period I was here. But one of my blessings was I was dating an average Nigerian guy. So he was able to help me navigate Nigeria. Because I think if I was dating a Nigerian guy that was very comfortable, my Nigerian experience would have also been very different. So because of how he navigated Nigeria, I was able to learn from him. I remember there was one time I went to go and get something from the mall, and it was like, I think 12K for a trousers. It was like, do you know about Ben Down Select? I was like, what is that? It was like, Tokumbo, you can buy trousers for like 500 naira, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean? So he was like, I'll take you to the market. We went to Aja Market together on a Sunday, and then I was able to pick up three. So, honestly, I needed to go back to the basics, and I think it's important. And I was extremely depressed. Like, I was depressed. I think I was suicidal at the time, actually.
Wow.
You know, but I knew that I needed to toughen up. I needed to grow up, you know, because I've been cushioned all my life, right? And I needed to understand the average Nigerian.
Yeah.
So for me, that experience shaped my whole 19 months in Nigeria. You know, I left that company after 6 months. When I went to NY orientation camp, I got headhunted by another company.
Okay.
So obviously, you know, things worked out in the end.
Okay.
But me going back to the UK to do my master's meant that I went back to the UK with a different mindset. I was hungry for success. I was hungry for life. I went back and I was just cutting people off. I was just like, I've outgrown you. I want to solve bigger problems. All this, you know, childish behavior that we are doing, like, you guys are literally beyond the thing. You don't even know the things I've been through in the last 2 years.
I can imagine.
Do you understand? Like, do you understand? So for me, that really shaped me. So coming back again after my master's last year, I was around during the election period with my dad. And you can imagine again, my dad said, you can't go out, it's election, nowhere is safe. I was in Abeokuta for 2 weeks. I'll literally get, before, you know, the car comes to pick us up, I'm on Okada, I'm already where I need to get them back. Because I navigated Nigeria like that. I was getting bikes and, you know, kekes everywhere. Taking a Uber is a luxury for me that I couldn't even afford at the time.
Yeah.
Wow. Right, so I think that me even telling you that entry level salary will tell you the kind of Nigerian experience I had, and nobody knew. Nobody knew.
Well, I must say that it gets deeper, doesn't it?
Of course, it
you know. And this that you've said has further validated your, you know, that ability, that capacity that you have to change Nigeria. Because I mean, you really need that. You know, reminds me of one of our military generals, late though, who actually was lived a cushioned life all his life, was trained in England, you know, went to the best school, had lectures in the Rolls Royce and all that. But he wanted to escape his father's shadow. And what he did, he came to Nigeria, you know, after trying to escape his dad and all that, he found that the military is the best place for him to escape that shadow. So with a master's degree from Eton or whatever, one of the best universities in the world, he left it. He threw everything, you know, he hid all of those certificates and went into the military as a recruit and grew through the ranks. So you just threw me back to those days of that man. And that shows that you are the true great Nigerian who wants to change Nigeria. And I'm impressed with this. Now, with all of this.
Thank you.
With all of this, where are you going?
Mm-hmm. What's the next step?
Where are you going? And what are you seeing that a lot of people are not seeing? So that we know, when we see what you're seeing, then perhaps we'll know how great where you're going is. Then we'll all follow you.
drop the headphones and follow you.
Where am I? Okay, so I'll kind of just give you one of my biggest drives for moving back. So there's a lot of amazing talent within the creative space. And the creative people were actually the reason why NFAS happened, right?
Yes.
Because creatives are very self-expressive,
absolutely,
right? From artists to, you know, we are the engine of the, we create the culture. Creatives create the culture in a society, in a community.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And for me, the creative and cultural industries of Nigeria, of Africa, is what I want to export to the world, right? That was the reason why I started BIDA. So BIDA, the store in the UK, is in Peckham. Peckham is known as Little Africa, Little Nigeria, Little Lagos, right? We have a store there. Since we opened the store last October, we've stocked over 50 brands from over 30 African countries from around the world. From Sudan, from Sudan to Togo, to Congo, to Nigeria, to Ghana, to Cote d'Ivoire, to South Africa, to Egypt. We are a Pan-African brand. We've hosted over 20 experiences in there.
Wow.
You know, majority of our customers are Oyinbo. 80% of our customers are Oyinbo. 80% of people that come to consume our experience are young black millennials who want to connect to their Africanness, right? But they don't have access to it, or it's not presented in a premium way that I presented to them, right? Because I have a Nigerian British experience, right? So it's authentic to me. When I'm British, I'm British. When I'm Nigerian, I'm Nigerian. When I'm, you know, so I can always find common influences to kind of appeal to them, right? And then also the older ones, or the people that
Nigeria, you are Niger.
I'm very Niger. And my boyfriend calls me Agbero. I'm just like, it's like, you really shock me. Like, you're very Nigerian. I'm like, yeah, I am a Nigerian. I don't understand this. You're very Nigerian. And then for people that were born in Nigeria but grew up in the UK, I then give them a nostalgic Nigeria that they miss, right? So if they come to a BIDA event in the UK, they get to have suya. They get to have Zobo. They get to have Chapman.
Oh my God.
Do you understand? So the experiences that even like Asun, you know, the experiences that they miss here, meat pie, all these things, I cannot give it to them over there in the diaspora, right? So my goal for moving back here is that where can you build an authentic Afro-urban experience better than the place that kind of bested Afro-urbanism, which is Lagos, right? So my goal really is to open the BIDA store in Lagos and create the culture, create the authenticity of the brand, and then export it all over the world. Because we've done London and we've realized that it's successful. So the goal right now is we're working on building a second, getting a second store in London. But then Lagos for me is my biggest. Is the thing that I hold myself the most, or I hold Nigeria the most. I want to build legacy brands, right? I want to build brands that can compete with, like, the Gucci's of the world, the Louis Vuitton's of the world. Make Africa, you know, aspirational to the world, right? Rather than we are always consuming Italian brands, French brands, Spanish brands, American brands, British brands. Why can't we also consume Nigerian brands, Egyptian brands, Moroccan brands, Kenyan brands, and position them to be aspirational, you know? So that is my motivation for coming here, to literally create an Afro-urban experiential concept store and a showroom and also agency, right? My biggest thing is I'm a problem solver, and I like to do it with, like, branding in mind, with experience in mind. You know, thinking about entertaining people, educating people, you know, providing this escapism for people. Lagos is hard. So, you know, we want to create a space whereby you come in and you forget your ad life. You forget the fact that you were stuck in traffic for 3 hours to get to the store. Because that's how I make people feel when they come to be that store in the UK, in London, right? It's like home for them. People never want to leave. And again, it's also a reflection of who I am, you know. My personal DNA is reflected on the brand, and this was also driven by the way that I've seen my parents run their businesses, right? So those DNAs have kind of traveled with me around the world, and I want to literally put a piece of myself or a piece of Africa in every country around the world.
Wow, okay.
So that's the goal for Bida, basically. Yeah.
Beautiful. Wow, I well, we could steal you right now. We could literally, Chris could steal you.
And I
know that what Chris wants to do right now is to drop his headphones and then look for you and then just follow you. But, well, you're stuck here. Anyway, it's been a great time. I've been enlightened. Personally, I've been enlightened. And I must say,
I've been bidded.
Listen, we are looking for investors anyone that wants to come and invest. Okay. Like, come and invest. Like, if you want to give us pro bono consulting services, because again, this thing is being bootstrapped. We don't have any ethno investment. You know, we don't, you know, our parents are not $10 and Dangote. We are working hard, and we are just literally trying to create something out of nothing, really and truly. That's what we are doing. Like, we are learning as we go along. We are not perfect. We are making mistakes. We only believe, like, we only learn by doing. Entrepreneurship is not something you can go and learn. You have to do it. You just have to do it. So that's literally what we are doing. We are just learning as we go along, but we definitely want to attract investors that want to build legacy brands, really, around the world, that is from Africa, you know. And yeah, literally, that's my mission, to pull Africa's creative and, you know, creativity out there in the world and culture. Yeah.
Wow. And I want to believe that this is going to be achieved. I'm trusting God, and of course, I'm trusting you. I know that this is going to be achieved, and I'm sure about it. And of course, we look up to people like you. We are proud of people like you, and we look up to people like you. And definitely, we know that you know, with this course that you've started, more people would follow suit. But at this point, we have to wrap it up. If not, they're going to kick us out of the studio.
I'm telling you, we can do this all day.
I mean, but I really do hope that we can get to do this again. You know, happen in Nigeria every day, every time. And I know that there's still a whole lot more to talk about. And I really do hope that we can get to do this again.
Yes, please. Yeah, and then if anyone wants to find me, you can find me at The Mariam Tijani, TheMariam. Tijani, or then if you want to follow the business page, is Bida Official, which is BIDHAAR Official. So that's literally our social handles. You can check our website as well, www.bida.com. We're launching our e-commerce very soon, so you can literally shop from any of the African brands that we have on the platform, really.
Beautiful. So, I mean, I want to believe our listeners have heard that. So definitely, please follow and just check it out, basically. Thank you so much, Miriam. Thank you so much for your time, for the knowledge, and for everything that you've shared with us today. We do not take it for granted. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
I will. So we can wrap up with your last favorite artist, right? Burna Boy.
Yes, we can.
All right, so we'll be leaving you with Burna Boy now. Of course, courtesy Miriam. Enjoy.
Dangote, 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 see the fame on you.
Exclusive from NigerKids.com.
No level, no level.
It's Kelpie Vibes.
Dangote, Dangote. Dangote see the fam on you. I know they, I know they, I know they sleep on him on you. Who happy, who happy? What make I no go fam on you? I know they send anybody. Me at the house you can't don't check up. Make you house you might look up. I know be your lord, I know be baller. Oh, I'm a to baller fucker. I could show you my color. She want to pay me a lot of color. If you got a more, yeah, I want color. The matter plenty, I know me only sucked up. Oh, no, no. You can listen well, well. When I dey strive and I dey hustle, waiting I dey find. Kaluba, they fine. When are they move from place to place? Waiting at they fine. Now the dollar, they fine. And I don't do yes, 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 yes. And many people don't tell me no, 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 no. Only let it low, di da da. Yuri, I'm your be mother, yeah. Is it because I did do I for love? If I get the cash, I go tell you love, papa. I go give you cash, I go be your sponsor. Money, I'm your be mother, yeah. Is it because I did do I for love? If I get the money, you go know. Still I go out to the night, come. Because, Dangote, 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 see the fam on you. I know they, I know they. I know they sleep on the money. Who happy, who happy? Where make I no go find money? I know they send anybody. Me at the house you can't go check up. Make you house you might look up. I know be your lord, I know be baller. Oh, I'm a to baller fucker. I could show you my color. She want to pay me a lot of baller. If me gonna go more, yeah, I want baller. The matter plenty, I know me only sat up. Oh no no. Hey me gone gone, I'm a dancer. Happy you forget, say happy the gaga. My man calling gaga, lori gaga. My man calling gaga, lori gaga. Very low I can be. Tori you gaga, no nu gaga. Pa mi nu gaga, yeah. I go there. Find money, why me no go find money? Oh. Find money, they let it find money. Oh. They look at the find money, why me no go find money? Find money, find money.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.